Hey, if you're hearing that music, you know that this is a fifth Friday of the month, and it's an edition of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives, talking about the real world from, well, a spiritual perspective. And in every single program of Spiritual Perspectives, one of the things we like to invite you to do is for you to join into our conversation. So if there's a question I haven't thought to ask, or a direction, a bit of information that I missed or you want more of, you're welcome to join in. Just give us a call here in the studio. It's area code 415-543, which spells kid, because we're child-like, not ish, and 8255, which spells talk. Of course, that's what we're going to do. 415-543-8255. You're welcome to join in the conversation. This is going to be a whale of the show. In fact, if you're on your way in, first of all, if you haven't headed into work yet and you normally come across the Bay Bridge, work from home today. The Bay Bridge will not be open for the morning commute, may not even be open for the Friday night party commute. That's not even clear, but it will not be open. If you're coming in on BART, make sure that you either get a ride to BART or take the bus to BART, because the BART parking lots are going to be full. So there's all of that part. But in the meantime, my suggestion is find a place where you can leave on the radio and just stay put for the next hour, because we are going to have a blast. I have a fascinating guest to talk with you this morning. This is Clara Germani. Clara actually is a senior editor at the Christian Science Monitor. It's a weekly news, I'm going to call it a news magazine. It's beyond a newspaper. Originally started as a newspaper, it's an exquisite news magazine. And the interesting part about the Christian Science Monitor is not that it's Christian Science. The interesting part about it is that right now, whether you are aware of it or not, all of your newspapers and most of your television and radio stations, except this one, are owned by two primary syndicates that have a specific political agenda. I'll just put it that way. You can agree with them or disagree with them. If you agree with them, you're probably really happy about it. But we'll just say that almost all of your newspapers and almost all of your TV station news and so forth are owned by the same people that choose the editorial content of Fox and MSNBC. Enough said. The Christian Science Monitor, on the other hand, still actually has its own reporters and its own offices around the world, where most of your major newspapers just draw from one single source. They're all getting their information from the AP. The Christian Science Monitor is actually still doing real reporting. So our guest this morning is a senior editor. She spent intermittent, I love this, 20 years at the Monitor. She's been a national and foreign correspondent based in San Francisco, Washington, Latin America, the Caribbean. Apparently she can't stay home very much. In the past decade, she's edited the Monitor's op-ed page, news feature, and now she edits cover stories. She was this year's honorable mention at the Dart Society, and I'll call it MIMI Award, and that's the nation's only journalism prize that recognizes exceptional work by newspaper editors. So she was the honorable mention this year, nominated by three different reporters on war-related projects in Liberia, Central Africa, Iraq, and Afghanistan. There was a period of time where she was actually even the Moscow bureau chief for the Baltimore Sun. Her journalistic travels have taken her around the world. In fact, I would guess multiple times. Everything from traveling to Siberia to Patagonia to hole up with guerrilla fighters in Chechnya to searching for wild boar in the Paraguayan Chaco. So a truly remarkable, remarkable career. Everybody, allow me to introduce you to Clara Germani. Clara, this is everybody.
Hi.
Good morning. What an amazing experience. I mean, your frequent flyer miles must have just been mind-boggling.
They were, and I long for them. It's been 10 years since I really was out in the field.
Get a job where you get to stay home, you just don't get those frequent flyer miles anymore.
That's right.
Clara, I wonder if we could start just a little bit, and this is not to pick on anybody, that's not it, but people are not truly aware that it doesn't matter whether they grab a New York paper, a Boston paper, or a San Francisco paper, for the most part, all of the stories they read come from the same place. Is that an accurate assessment?
Well, I think that there's a lot of stories are built on the same preconceived ideas. I mean, when a news story hits, the facts are largely the same, and the people will feed off each other. So that can happen. it just depends on which organization you're talking about. I mean, we sometimes come to a story and know what we know from AP because AP often is the first place. But mm-hmm. but then we send our reporters in and have them doing our own take on it. So
that was my thought, actually, is that the vast majority of the papers no longer have a staff of reporters to send in. They really are just working off the AP and then whatever they can do from their own office.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the
I can
New York
hear you
Times,
trying to be polite.
Yeah, I think the large papers. Well, for example, I could say the Baltimore Sun. I mean, they've been decimated. They're owned by the Tribune Company, which is falling apart. And of course, I worked there, and they had an expanse, just a huge amount of foreign bureaus and coverage, and it was just stellar. And that's fallen apart. They've closed everything now. So where they get their material, they're part of a syndicate, which is, you know, they're owned by the Tribune. So the Los Angeles Times is included in that, and the Times still has its coverage from abroad. So they feed on that. I mean, they use that.
Yeah, well, even here in the Bay Area, where we used to have three newspapers, and now we have three different titles, but I noticed that any of the three papers I pick up on any given day, because there are days where I end up reading two or even three of them, for the most part, I'm reading the same article, maybe with one paragraph differentiated so that the reporter could put their byline on it.
Yeah, that can happen. I can't speak for the paper there, but I know how that happens. I've worked for smaller papers. I mean, when I was coming up in the business, you know, I worked at smaller at a metro paper, and often you were just kind of reading what had been on the wires that morning and making a call and updating it to be your own. That did happen.
So the Christian Science Monitor, the first thing I'd like to defuse for people is it sounds as if it's a religious publication. So rather than me describe that, just talk about that. The Christian Science Monitor, it has that Christian Science phrase in it, but is this a religious publication? Is it out there pushing some religious agenda?
No, not directly. It is an organ of the Christian Science Church, First Church of Christ Zionist in Boston. And but if you want, can I give you a little history of how it started?
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, Mary Baker Eddy was the founder of Christian Science. It's a Protestant religion. She founded it in the late 1800s. And was very popular at that time, and had a very large following in her healing practice. And what happened was that Joseph Pulitzer, who owned tabloid publications at that time, didn't like what he saw. She was an uppity woman who started a church and was very rich. Because of that, I mean, she became very successful.
Plus, she was a woman.
And a woman. At that time, women didn't even vote. They couldn't own property often. It depended on where you were. But she was hounded by him. He took her up as a target and found it, you know, great to hammer on her. And at some point, other newspapers came into it and started reporting, doing their own reporting, and found out she wasn't as crazy as he thought. And so that subsided, but her experience was so bad that she felt she wanted to found a newspaper that could be trusted, because she saw all of the lying and I mean, much like the blogger atmosphere at this time, where you don't really know where to turn. At that time, it was, you know, muckraking yellow journalism. People wanted a place to turn, and she decided she was going to found a newspaper, and it was not going to preach. It was going to simply shed light on the facts, and she wanted it to be international, and national, and so she founded the newspaper, and it was considered a very strange idea, I think, by a lot of people then, but it became very successful. And a little irony to the story is that Pulitzer went on to found the Pulitzer Prizes to fund them, and the Monitor has won 7.
I'm sure he was like spinning in his wherever.
Right.
I love one quote I found as I was looking at some of the history here. Mrs. Eddy, and this is speaking in like 1883, but it just rings a bell now. She says, looking over the newspapers of the day, one naturally reflects that it is dangerous to live. So loaded with disease seems the very air. These descriptions carry fears to many minds to be depicted in some future time upon the body. A periodical of our own will counteract, to some extent, this public nuisance. For through our paper, we shall be able to reach many homes with healing and purifying thought. There's a later note that says, because much, in fact, all of Mary Baker Eddy's work was founded on the notion of healing. And she goes on to say, if a basic theology, we'll say, of the church says that what reaches and affects thought shapes experience, it follows that a newspaper will have significant impact on the lives of those who read it. So it said that she was founding the paper to bring literally an unblemished truth as being freeing and a fundamental human right. With it, citizens can make informed decisions and take intelligent actions for themselves and society. So would you say that an accurate assessment of the Christian Science Monitor is that a base goal of this paper, this weekly news magazine, it's an exquisite publication, a base goal is to bring an unbiased perspective so that people can actually reach their own decisions?
I can say it with authority. I do it every day. I mean, that's part of, we take it very seriously. We do that every day in our work. We, you know, her motto in all of that you read from her ideas about founding it, her motto was, and it's on the paper, stamped right on there, is to injure no man but to bless all mankind. And we do ask that in the newsroom. I mean, it always comes up when we have something that's a little bit ugly or the depiction in a story is perhaps not that nice. We ask ourselves, is this injuring somebody, and is it going to bless all mankind? And we do ask that. And sometimes stories are not pretty, and we have to think about how we're presenting them.
Well, that was an interesting piece about it, is that the Christian Science Monitor does not set out, and I'm going to make up a word here, to prettify.
Yeah.
It does not set out to prettify it, or prettify. It sets out to actually bring the real information.
Yeah, that's right. A couple of previous editors of the paper have said things that I particularly like. Kay Fanning, who was the first woman editor of a national paper in the U.S., and that was in the 1980s. She said, we don't accept that problems are insoluble. We're not Pollyannas, but we do believe that there is good everywhere, and we're dedicated to improving the world by uncovering that good. And so that kind of says it.
And yet, lest anybody be confused, it's not like this is, the only thing that gets reported is, gee, the dog found its way home, because the Monitor is now, because so many news operations have been so decimated and don't have reporters, I'm noticing more and more frequently that I'll see stories attributed in the major publications or even in television radio news that are attributed to a Christian Science Monitor bureau or a Christian Science Monitor reporter. You guys are seriously covering not just the dog found its way home and Timmy got out of the well, but you're covering wars at a level that I have to say the San Francisco papers aren't.
Yeah, one thing I will say, I mean, you may see us, often we do, you know, we are breaking news where others aren't. We often cover what others are covering, too. But the neat thing about our paper is, I mean, we're a small, scrappy bunch. It's a small operation, just, you know, 75 people in the editorial end of things. We often will be in places or see stories that we think are worth putting in the paper that not everybody has jumped on because everybody else, the pack, is all over something else. And that's one of the great things about us. And I can point to a few things. I mean, we won a Pulitzer in 1995, or we won it in 96, 4, 95. Our reporter, David Rode, who you may recognize his name because he was recently released. He had been kidnapped. He's with the New York Times now, and he was kidnapped in Afghanistan, but has been released, thankfully. In 1995, he actually snuck behind the lines and discovered the Srebrenica grave, mass grave, the massacre that occurred there. And
wow.
Bosnia, he was the one who discovered that. I mean, when you hear about that, that is known because he went in and found the graves. And that was something he was doing on his own. The pack wasn't there. They'd heard about these things, but nobody was really looking into it. And he took it upon himself to do that. And so we do things like that.
This guy's got some serious guts.
Yeah, he definitely does. you kind of have to have him. That and, you know, some sort of sense of safety when you do things like that.
All right, that's not where we were going, but it is now. I want you to expand on that sentence you just used, my dear. Some sort of sense of safety when you do a thing like that.
Well,
I just have a feeling that that might coincide with your own personal belief system.
That is. And I may have been putting that on, David. I don't know what his personal beliefs are, but I do know that virtually everyone has a belief system, you know, something that's going on in their head, in their thought. And I can only speak for myself, really. And,
yes, please.
But yeah, I mean, when you enter into a situation like that, and I've done a little of it. I can't say I've done what he's done, but when you go into a situation, you have to go in with a mindset, a sensibility that you're going to be okay. Because if you go in thinking that you're not going to be okay, you can't function.
Yeah, then you're not brave. Then you're just stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't even know if bravery, I mean, for me, I'm a pretty, you know, I overthink things often, and sometimes that's what I need to do. I mean, you know, if you wanted to get into this sense of prayer here, you know, for me, I'll often start to overthink things and try to look at the material evidence, the evidence before me. There's, you know, some gunfire over here. There's something over there. If I do this, I'll do that. I think you have to sometimes just quiet your panic and start thinking about who you are in the world and who really directs your life and who is really in charge.
That is a question, because I know we're talking about the monitor, but for a moment, Clara, we're talking about you, because this is a question that I ask in every episode of Spiritual Perspectives. What does the word prayer mean for you?
It can mean different things in different settings, but largely it's expansive thinking, you know, quieting my hyper tendency. I'm a journalist, so I'm hyper, and I'm sometimes willful and wanting to make things happen and get to things and do things. And it's often just trying to calm myself, calm my thought, so that I can be open to ideas that come to me. And that's what we call in Christian Science, we call angels, God's thoughts passing to man. And that's what I'm waiting for, what I'm hoping, yearning to hear is the right idea.
That was beautifully put. Angels, God's thought passing to man. I like that. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
That's exquisite. So in the Christian Science Monitor, is this entirely church-controlled? Is everybody got to be a Christian Scientist before they're allowed in the door?
No, not at all. The upper management has to be Christian Science, but I would say it's about 50-50 right now in the editorial staff, 50% Christian Scientists and 50% other, you know, many different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not required. We do by law, because we're owned by a church, have the right to, you know, give preference to Christian Scientists when we hire, but largely we're looking for the best possible people. And we're looking for people who share our sensibilities, and our sensibilities aren't necessarily defined, you know, or limited by, you know, a religious denomination at all. And that's why the paper itself, I mean, we're looking to reach people, be, you know, outside the bounds of religious definition.
Well, what sets the Monitor's journalism? What really sets it apart? You gave a basic trade, which is that any harm none, effectively, but be a blessing to all. But what really sets the Monitor's journalism apart from that other news coverage out here that's got to make a dollar?
Well, we want to make a dollar, and I encourage all of you to give us your dollars by subscribing, but we're not trying to profit necessarily. We want people to purchase us and value us. But what makes us different is that we're not trying to be what all the other papers are. First of all, for me as a journalist, I think there are some things that Mary Baker Eddy set out, that would just show you the difference. But I want to just say, for me, I've worked at other publications and I've worked here, and I love those other places, but at the Monitor, there's a freeing sense that you do not have to do what the other people are doing.
Ah.
Always. I mean, sometimes you do. Sometimes you have to go to that story that you really don't want to go to because 1,000 other reporters are there. But you're free to think about what really matters, and they're open, the management is open to that. And also, in terms of the way you cover things, as I said, I've never, in other newsrooms, no one ever asks, who is this going to hurt? I mean, we do ask that. Does this hurt anybody? And a lot of times you just want to smack your forehead and go, oh, we can't do that because it hurts somebody, because, you've got a great angle on a story or something. I think one of the things that I'll give you this. I don't know how your listeners will feel about this, but we had a political cartoonist at one time, a Pulitzer Prize-winning political cartoonist, who would just stomp his feet because he wasn't allowed to draw Bush with gigantic ears. He had to tone down his ears because it just made him. He still looked pretty goofy in some of the political cartoons, but they would often want him to just tone down those ears, and that was because it was hurtful to make him so bizarre, and so sometimes you think, oh, are we taking it too far? But no, I think I'd rather take it too far than not think about it at all.
Yeah, well, I think internationally he ended up looking goofy enough all on his own. That's just my own commentary.
Well, I think
may
yeah,
not be reflected by the management and staff of.
You don't have to add to it.
That's one of the pieces. Because one thing I'll mention, I have the latest edition, I believe, of the Christian Science Monitor, and I noticed that as I go in, there's a whole page here about questions about Islam. So certainly, and then a lot of reporting. The next article is a phenomenal article, but this individual that they're reporting on, her belief system is based in Buddhism, and she's doing a tremendous amount of forensic work to help find the actual people perpetrating some horrible stuff in Thailand, but not based on Christian beliefs, based on Buddhist beliefs. So it's very, very clear that it's not just, it's got to be Christian Science or we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. No. We don't have any issues talking about other religions. In fact, we've had huge series of on other religions, on Islam in particular. We've covered that very thoroughly. No, we don't. And in fact, the thing that you mentioned, the article that you just mentioned, it's one of our trademarks. We have a thing called People Making a Difference. It's a profile in every issue of the magazine, and it looks at people, and often those people are. It's really kind of an interesting thing. If I can go off on this,
yes,
for a second, those articles are. Focus on people who are doing things in the world, regular people doing things in the world that make a difference. As an editor, I'll tell you the story. There was a woman who was working in the Bangkok Hilton, which is the prison there. She was an Australian woman who was working there. And the reporter wrote the story for me and talked about this woman and why she was working there and how she'd had a background in drugs. She'd had a tough time with drugs and had come out of it and was working with these people, not on just on a shoestring, helping them in the prison. And there was something about the way he wrote the story. It didn't. I hadn't published it yet, but I said, well, it sounds like this woman has a spiritual, you know, motive or something. And he goes, well, what do you mean? And I said, well, everything you're saying about this woman, I mean, did you ask her about her faith system, her belief system? And the reporter said, well, no, I just never came up. And I said, well, you know, could you just make a call and find out if she's, you know, religious or something? He called her back and she ended up saying, come back out. She said, I didn't think you cared about it, or because you're a big newspaper, I didn't think you'd care about my religion.
Yes.
But yeah, that's the whole reason I'm here. And so often many of these people making a difference stories have a spiritual perspective behind them. Not always, but I find that, you know, sometimes people bury that. They don't want to talk about it, or they think it's not mainstream enough or something.
Ah, well said. Well said. So our program this morning, I want to mention very quickly, is being sponsored by the First Church of Christian Scientists in Mill Valley. They encourage you to check out their reading room as well as their services and their Sunday school opportunities. But they are also offering they're offering 10 of these. So for our first 10 callers, they would also like to give you an opportunity to check out a 26-week subscription. They will give that to you as a gift of the Christian Science Monitor. It's a weekly news magazine. It's an exquisite thing. In fact, I almost missed my stop this morning on BART because I got lost in an article. So that would have been your fault, Clara.
Oh, I'm glad.
So let me give you the number. I'll let you know we'll need a name, an address, and an email address. It's not that we're going to put you on any list. It's just that's information required for them to fill out the gift subscription for you. And that's for our first 10 callers, two of which we have already before I give out the number. The phone number is 415-543-8255. 415-543-8255. We'd love to have you participate in that way. Just give Kwong your name, your address, and your email. Please spell everything for him. We tie up a lot of lines with this show, so if you get a busy signal, that doesn't mean that you missed it. It just means it's time for you and your angel moments of God to give your timing perfect to catch it when one of the lines comes open again. So, Clara, clearly we're doing a nice job because those lines lit up before I could even give out the number.
Great. Can I add something about subscriptions?
Yes, please.
I'm not in the sales department, but I do want to mention the monitor, the daily monitor is available online all the time, but this exquisite magazine that you talk about is only available by subscription, by mail subscription, so you won't find it on newsstands. I just want to warn, you know, listeners that they can't go looking for it on newsstands. They can find it at Christian Science reading rooms, but not at stores, so you either have to subscribe or look for it in the reading room.
Yeah, and I'll actually say that I noticed there's a special right now for the subscription, so people can jump up there. Can we send them to a website where they could get that subscription? Do you have that in front of you? I was just glancing at my paper, and I set that one aside somewhere. I've lost it.
Yeah, well, they can go to csmonitor.com. That's csmonitor.com. And when you go there, up on the right-hand corner, usually, it can move, but in the right-hand corner is where the subscription, the right-hand top corner, is usually where the subscription area is, and you can go in there.
And then there's every day they can go into csmonitor.com, and then there's another one that caught my attention, which is an email subscription, and that sounded really cool. Let's talk about that for just a moment.
Okay.
It's a daily news briefing, no less?
Yeah, it basically is it's a digesting of some things that have been in the Daily Monitor and the Weekly Monitor, and the editor of the paper writes a brief column every day, a fresh brief column that sort of presents what's in there and has some ideas of his own, you know, to present it, and it's 4 pages. It's a PDF. You get it as a PDF that you could print out,
mm-hmm.
And it's quite short. It has usually 3 or 4 stories in it with a few little other things. And
I like the quote that apparently Mrs. Eddy was speaking about, this concept of a daily thing, and it's short articles for busy people.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, that's right. And it costs $5.75 a month, and it comes in your email 5 days a week at 5 a.m. Boston time.
Which is O Dark Hundred out here.
Yeah, that's right. But for you night owls. And and you can print it out and take it with you, you know, on the subway or wherever you read your morning papers. And it's we started it tentatively, you know, last April, and it's really rocketed. We have a lot of people subscribing now. It's a whole new form that it's just a happy surprise that people like it.
I like the description on the weekly where it says we go behind the headlines to more deeply examine the issues of the issues the world is grappling with. The Monitor Weekly is published in a format suited to a part of the week when people have more time to dig into the issues and explore ideas the world is thinking about. And that was one of the things I noticed as I was reading in the monitors that you guys were nice enough to send me, and now I'll have to get my own subscription. You've got me hooked. You've got me hooked already. But I really felt like lots of times I'll cruise through because I like to know what's going on, and I find that the European press seems to have more coverage. But when I picked up the monitor, I really felt like I was getting a better sense of a global coverage. And we're not putting down any of the other papers, but you're sitting there in the editorial department with a journalism background. Does it seem to you that the monitor perhaps is more global rather than the sort of local nationalistic reporting in some of our own press?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We don't do anything without thinking about what might be the, you know, the international perspective. Example, I don't know if I had sent you the issue dated November 1, which is this Sunday, Eyes Off the Road. It's about texting and cell phone use in cars.
Ooh.
And now that... You know, that could be a very domestic, I mean, it is a heavily domestic story, but one thing that we offer is, you know, a sidebar, a graphic that shows what other countries have done. And in fact, other countries have been much more strict much earlier than the U.S. has been on it. So there you have a domestic story, but we're also thinking, what's the global dimension here?
And let's take in the fact that truthfully, America is not the leading adopter of cell phones. I mean, that's one of those things that we don't know. And so other countries, why should we have to be the one that invents the wheel on some of this if we can get the international perspective and find out what they've tried and what worked?
Yeah, yeah. Likewise with healthcare, we've done that. You know, we had a healthcare issue, you know, healthcare reform issue, which actually, you know, we had our reporters in a lot of other countries looking at what they did. And I think things work better in a lot of places.
You're being so careful.
Well, we just put the facts out there. I'm not going to give a value judgment.
Actually, today you're allowed to have your very own opinion.
Okay.
We'll just blame it all on you.
Okay.
So how do you compare the monitor? Which, I mean, the fact that it's not on newsstands, people don't necessarily buy, you know, it's not sitting there next to the Inquirer at their local grocery store. So they may think of it as a tiny little publication, but how do you compare it to other news organizations covering international news?
How do I compare the actual product or the way it is to work?
In terms of how the monitor goes after that coverage of international news, I know we mentioned a little earlier, but I'd like to just come back and touch on that in terms of the reporterage that the monitor uses around the world. Just to make up a word, reporterage.
Oh.
I like that one. Can I get that?
Yeah.
Can I get that one past an editor?
I understand it. I feel like it communicates. That's good enough. I'm not going to be a copy editor on you.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. Well, we have bureaus, and I've got to look at a list because it's an ever changing thing. We have 7 foreign bureaus,
wow.
And obviously, if something happens in, Congo, we don't have a staff person in Congo. We have a staff person in South Africa who has been to Congo and may have a very long list of sources who he can call. And and find out about things, or we just call our stringer, a person, a freelancer who is in Congo, and we have in every country we have someone that's not on staff necessarily, but mm-hmm. is there. So And when something happens, we make a decision. Is this going to be a lasting story that we need to get our reporter there to do, or can we exist with the reporter doing some phone calling and the person in country feeding that reporter some information? We do that. Whereas the New York Times, which has a lot of money, would immediately probably send their reporter there. So that's one of the facts of life we have to deal with. But is that kind of what you're talking about?
Well, and then there's a piece, and I just because I pay attention to the topic, that people want to catch is the New York Times, who has a lot of money, would immediately send their reporter there, but then what that reporter saw would actually be what would be reported in probably 50 papers across the country.
Yes.
And
yeah.
So that would be one person's view from one paper's perspective, and that would be the only reporter that they were all depending on. So I gather that the Monitor, though, since it's not a profit motive per se, you certainly want to, keep enough money to keep the joint going, but it's not a profit motive. It's certainly not a politically based motive. As near as I can tell, the Christian Science Monitor is not owned by the same Rupert Murdoch organizations that own so many others. Apparently, it's seeking to be truly an independent voice.
Oh, yeah, and we are. I mean, de facto, we're run by the church, but let's just say that the church doesn't. There may be some preponderance of Democrats or Republicans or whatever, or independents in the church and in the church leadership. I really don't know where they
Which
stand.
Which is nice, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's nice not to know. I mean, you are always second guessing. You're wondering, when there's, repercussions of something, you do wonder sometimes, well, what's the motive here? But I never have had anyone tell me you can't do something, or here's the twist you've got to have. The only twist we have to have is looking for solutions and not giving up on problems. That's the only twist we give it. But I've never had anybody do that. Now, and just to be fair, I've worked at some other newspapers and a wire service, and to be honest with you, I never had anyone there either tell me I had to do something, nor did I feel, I was being forced to do anything or take a perspective that wouldn't have been what I was doing already. Now, I know there have been cases where things have happened. I think of the Los Angeles Times with their issues down there. I don't know that it was ever communicated to the reporters what the overarching things were, at a higher level. I just don't know that. Just speaking for the Monitor, no, I've never had anyone say, you have to do this or that. Though, one thing that is a motivator, and I don't know, I think other papers may do this too, but we're very responsive to our readers. I mean, we really care. And when we find that a lot of liberals are griping about something that we've done, or a lot of conservatives are griping about something that we've done, we are sensitive to that, and we look at it and say, well, should we be covering a little more in this area? Like, it's not that we change what we're doing on any given story, but maybe we open our ears a little more and think, I will say that we have a lot of liberal readers. We have a lot of conservative readers too, but often when conservatives will write in, you do have to ask yourself, well, have we been doing something a little too, have we been focusing on sources that are a little too liberal? Have we, or sometimes when, liberals call and say, I can't believe that you wrote a story that was so supportive of Bush. We've had things like that happen. So we're always listening, and we're always trying to adjust as we go. I mean, but not to bend over backwards to make somebody happy. We're just sensitive to what people are hearing, because we can make mistakes, and we can, we're all human.
I find that heartening to think in terms of a publication, a major publication, and a paper where people are actually intentionally self pardon the word, monitoring, to recognize whether or not they're allowing a bias to enter in as opposed to just doing straight up reporting. There's some major papers and major publications if they do question, they only question to make sure they're keeping their bias far enough over to where it is they wanted it.
Yeah.
I'll just say that. It's from just some of my own reading. I'm just watching headlines and noticing that I read a headline the other day, and the headline for headline scanners said something like, Obama and Biden have dirty secret, or something like that was the headline, and it turned out their secret, have a smashing secret or something, and a scandalous secret, that was it. And their scandalous secret was that they had invited the reporters to go out for a burger rather than have lunch at the White House. Their scandalous secret was that they like going out for burgers at sleazy burger joints. And yet if you only headline scanned, you came away with a completely different sense of what they were reporting.
Yeah, well, as a journalist, I mean, I always like, this is a little primer for people who don't work in the business. I will say, I can't speak for that headline. It sounds like they were really reaching and trying hard, you know, to get some attention. I don't know where their bias really was, but it sounds like an attention getter they were aiming at. But headlines are really. It's really a touchy thing because you have often, I mean, I'm looking at our publication here, like the headline on the cover story, you can do four words, you know, and you're trying really hard to capture what's in the story so that the reader isn't disappointed when they get there, and that you communicate what the story's about. But also, it's a sales job. It's, you know, trying to get the reader to be interested in what's in that story. And often it really is quite a puzzle to write headlines, I'll tell you. And sometimes you write them in your mind. It's sort of like being in the forest, and you write something that you think is good, and then you find that thousands of readers read it a completely different way. And there's an avalanche of people saying, you know, you're mainstream media, you know, attacking the good people again, and it sometimes isn't intentional, but I will say it really is a quite a challenging puzzle to write headlines, and there's some people who do it really well and some people who, you know, bumble through it.
Yeah, I know the feeling. One of the people I was training to teach some of my classes, and I was listening to recordings of what they've done, so I'd known. And they were reading some class material, and I'm sitting listening to the recording, thinking that class is never going to get it from how you phrased that. And the class, somebody in the class went, "Huh?" And the person, and I'd trained this person. They read it again the same way, and the person went, "Well, say that in your own words." And they literally said out loud, "Well, I would if I knew what he meant." It was like, okay, I thought that was totally transparent when I wrote it, and suddenly I was the trees in the forest. I will mention we have, I think, two more subscriptions. So actually you can, there's an open line right now if you want to grab that exquisite gift from the Church of Mill Valley, a 26-week subscription to the Christian Science Monitor. The phone number, 415-543-8255. Kwong, is that two more or three more? Three more. So, fill those two lines, and then one person gets past the busy signal at 415-543-8255. Because I'm in the show, I don't qualify to get one of those, so you guys can have them. So if the news that the Monitor is putting out is really about world news, as opposed to it being a particular Protestant or Christian view, why keep the name Christian Science in the name of the Christian Science Monitor? Don't you think that chases people away?
Honestly, yeah, I think sometimes it does, because I think people that don't know about the paper and what it's about will think it's, you know, a religious publication or something. But the fact of the matter is it is different. It's different. And I think that Mary Baker Eddy, I mean, when she mandated it, that be what it is called. There's a couple of things. It's honest to say where the paper is coming from. It tells you it's not, you know, mainstream media.
Yeah, true.
It tells you it's not a corporation, but it may signal it's a church and people who don't know about it don't know. So, but the honesty is there, the transparency. Then also, just I think it's a good thing for the church, you know, because they are. This is a mission, and I mean not. It's not a missionary to, you know, to convert. We're not looking to convert. It's a mission of the church to shed light, and it's right that people see that it's coming from this place, that it's run by these people, and we'll take the hits we take, you know, if people, you know, don't understand that it's not a religious publication, we just have to work harder to get our name out there and make people understand. I think for a certain section of the populace, that, you know, back the Monitor was in the 60s, 70s, you know, that era, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, it had a 250,000 population. I mean, circulation at a certain point.
Wow.
and was widely used in colleges. I know I was in college in the late 70s, and it was required reading in certain, you know, social studies kinds of courses and that. And a lot of people of a certain age do know what the reputation is because they read it, because they were required to read it at a certain point in their life, or because it was just so well known. And I think people in power positions, like in Washington, is very well known in Washington. I mean, and we have a lot of our reporters are regular talking heads on radio shows, you know, public radio largely. But I think one, you know, our correspondent in Iraq was just on NewsHour the other night. People who are well informed certainly know who we are and don't have any confusion about us being a religious publication.
And I think I have seen that more and more, where I'm seeing various news sources that I look at are drawing from members of the Christian Science Monitor staff, because I gather both because they're there, but also because that gives a more balanced perspective in a lot of cases.
Yeah, yeah. I think enlightened editors who draw from us. We have a syndication, and you can see our work in a lot of newspapers around the country. A lot of people are drawing on us that way because we have unique value. I mean, we have stuff that other people don't have, other newspapers don't have. So, yeah, you'll see that, and that comes and goes. That's up and down. I mean, some years our syndication is wider than it is other times, but yeah, people recognize that, I think.
Very cool. So let me mention real quick that one of the things that we bring out in spiritual perspectives is real life from a spiritual perspective. We're talking about that information from Christian Science, and frequently we talk about spiritual healing. So I'll mention that the Christian Science Sentinel program actually airs here on KEST every Monday at 6 a.m. and every Thursday at 10 a.m. And the folks at Mill Valley wanted to make sure that I mentioned that if you find that the notions we're talking about fit your mind, check out any of the Christian Science reading rooms. When you walk in, it's not like you're going to be captured by some happy person that suddenly declares you have to join their church and recruits. It's just a place for, not just, it's specifically a place for sharing ideas and concepts. And one of the things I wanted to loop back again to, Clara, was you'd mentioned that the perspective is not that perspective of that the problems we're reporting on, even if it's an issue, are insoluble. Talk about that just a little bit.
Well, that is one of the values for people of faith or people who want to help the world. Mary Baker Eddy, one of my favorite things that Mary Baker Eddy, the founder of Christian Science, said, and she said it in the church textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. She says that the good you do and embody is the only power obtainable. The good you do and embody is the only power obtainable. In this world, you know, if you have a sensibility, you know, if you're feeling overwhelmed by the problems of the world, you know, the David and Goliath situation, you feel like a little David against a big Goliath. you know, AIDS or war or health care issues, you know, the big Goliaths, you know, you're out there trying to get ideas for how to slay the giants, you know, and the Monitor is that. It is a place where you can get kind of a prayer template. Here is a place that lays out the problems and gives you, it tells you what the problem is, but it also makes an effort to bring some of the good stories so that you can make decisions, whether you pray about something. And many Christian Scientists, actually, I've not been in one, but I know of Christian Science groups that get together to use the Monitor to pray about world problems, like a template for things to think about and pray about, so that that you can make decisions about how you vote, we don't endorse candidates. We just give you the facts and try to show you how the world is working, to shed light on it. As we shed light on things, you can do good, and that's the only power that you can obtain and slay the Goliaths of problems. So that's kind of one way to look at what the Monitor does.
Fabulous. I do want to mention that we have had frantic callers calling in. We've more than given away, or actually we've given away the 10 and had people begging, can't we do more than that? So I think that's really sweet. So I'll say, go in there and find it on the webpage and make your own subscription. In fact, I believe there's a special on right now for that 26-week subscription. I won't quote that necessarily, but I think you might be able to catch a special.
Yeah, you can.
Oh, good. I love that.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and tell them how much.
It's only $13 for 26 weeks. It's a hot deal right now.
What a score.
Yeah.
That's fabulous. And so to find that information, let's send them into the website again, if you would please, Clara.
csmonitor.com. And in the upper right-hand corner is usually a subscription box, a box where you can click and find subscriptions. That's how you do it.
Cool. csmonitor.com. And then also, would that be the same place that they'd go for that daily news briefing, the
yes.
email subscription?
Yeah, you'll have a lot the choices there. For what you can subscribe to.
I'm excited about that one. Actually, now that I know I can get it for $13, I'm going to have to try out that 26 weeks as well.
Yeah.
I want that. That's good stuff.
Seriously, you guys sent me some samples so I could look at them, and now I'm hooked. It's like, wait, where's the next one? I loved that.
And,
it was fabulous.
It normally, it's $89 a year, so you can see $13 is...
And
now I'm going to shut up because I'm not a salesman. I'm an editorial person.
Sometimes that works better. That way we don't get the Sunday, it'll be there. You know, we can just skip that part altogether. So if you were to summarize, now you are one of the members of the editorial group that actually happens to also be a Christian Scientist as well. Is the scientist,
I am.
Science practitioner, whatever it would be.
No, I'm not a practitioner. My belief system is Christian Science.
Fabulous. What would be your personal view about the idea of looking for solutions rather than problems? Sorry, sprung that one on you with no warning.
Can you restate it?
You made a commentary that a portion of the reporting for the Monitor always is looking at the notion that the problem is not insoluble. Mm-hmm. From your own belief system, what would be your personal view about the idea of looking for solutions rather than only focusing on the problem?
Okay. Well, that would go back to prayer a bit. I mean, as an individual, not so much as a journalist, because there's various levels of what I do or how I think.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, I think of war. I think of Afghanistan, for example, and I think, well, what is the problem? What needs to be healed here? And that's pretty multidimensional. I mean, you could look at that and say there's a lot of fear. I mean, there's fear because of 9/11. There's fear in Afghanistan because of an invasion from us or because of intertribal, problems which kill people. There's a lot of fear there. And, I mean, that's that for me, that's where I would start. Mm-hmm. And what needs to be healed when it comes to fear, it's misunderstandings. And for me, it's trying to know that mankind is good because God made mankind. And, you know, all the differences that might come up because of the differences in people can be bridged. They can. It may seem impossible, and it may seem protracted, and it may seem dangerous, but there is good. And my job as an individual, and to a degree, you know, going out as a journalist, is to see that good and to try to, you know, highlight that and to co-opt that, to make that be the thing that works. Now, that may sound, you know, very idealistic.
Didn't at all. It sounded perfect.
Okay.
Sounded absolutely perfect. Thank you so much. This has been such a delight. I wish we had about 4 more hours to continue this as a series. Our guest this morning has been Clara Germani. She works with and is a cover editor for the Christian Science Monitor. Clara, it's been an absolute privilege to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me this morning.
You're welcome. I enjoyed it.
Great, thanks. I'll mention again, you can go to csmonitor.com for a subscription. This has been Spiritual Perspectives, looking at real life from a spiritual perspective. Find us every time there's a fifth Friday in the month, and this is Scout Bartlett reminding you that today's a perfect day for you to go out and have a great day on purpose.
What better time than Halloween to share an evening with Scout Bartlett as he shares stories of life after death and before. Details at eastwest.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Len Saputo, and I want to let you know about my new book, A Return to Healing. It brings together the story of everything you've been listening to all these years on Prescriptions for Health Radio, and is now available at Amazon.com. A Return to Healing exposes a serious conflict of interest between big